Ken Ballin is a former federal prosecutor who spent 5 years trying to figure out what motivates Islamic extremists to carry out violent attacks against the United States and others they consider enemies of Islam. Ballin is a founder and president of Terror Free Tomorrow, an organization devoted to investigating the causes of extremism. He interviewed more than 100 Islamic radicals both in and out of prisons in the Middle East and Indonesia. His book about the personal lives and motivations of six of the terrorists he spoke with is called Terrorists in Love, The Real Lives of Islamic Radicals. Ken Ballin joins us once again on the roundtable this morning. Ken, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad to be on.
You were with us when this book was released in hardcover. It is now out in paperback. Since the release of the book, what was the reaction?
By and large, the reaction has been very favorable. I mean, I think that a lot of people, I think we suffer in this country from terrorism fatigue, if you will. You know, we've been so inundated since 9/11 with this phenomenon. I think many people are just tired of it and don't want to focus on it, and it's certainly understandable. So I think a lot of people see the title of the book or they see the subject matter, terrorism, and they shy away from it. However, once people read this book, they discover that it's an entirely different world, that their preconceptions and stereotypes about this issue and about the people involved in it really go by the wayside, which kind of mirrors my personal experience, which is why I wrote the book. I thought I was a so-called expert on this topic until I actually talked to the people who were involved in terrorism, and I discovered an entirely different world from what I expected. So I think the reaction has been very favorable, including people within our government who are on the front lines of this conflict and who have read the book.
So in the course of these interviews, and as you say, you have been labeled as an expert on terrorism. So in the course of these interviews, what changes you? What do you start to realize that you did not before?
Well, it's part of the beauty of the book, if I will, is that the accounts are firsthand, intimate life stories of these young men, and in one case, a woman and one who's not so young, who become involved in the radical Islamic movement. And how they become involved is told from their point of view. So many people can read these accounts and walk away with different opinions than I have, because it is, in a sense, kind of primary source material. It's raw stories revealing intimate lives. But, you know, I walk away, there's a number of lessons I walk away from, one of which is that we have missed, the United States government and our country has missed a huge opportunity in fighting this adversary, which is to expose the truth behind the movement, which acts like a cleanser, because many of the people who join this movement are highly idealistic, romantic, seeking some kind of meaning in their lives. And when they discover what it's really like, it turns them off. And I think exposing what this whole movement is really like can go a long way to defeating it. And that has been, since 9/11, the biggest thing weakening the radical movement has been the radical movement itself, not our conflict against it.
It certainly seems, and I want to key in look at what you mean by of how these people join the movement, because obviously everyone's story is different, but what they do have in common is most of them are young, most of them are impressionable, and most of them feel that they are doing good.
That's correct. I mean, and you're absolutely right, Joe. Everybody's story is different, and even these six individuals are different, and we can't take six people and make some kind of global statement that applies to everybody. But that's what's striking about it, is that they're very human motives. They come from a very different cultural and religious framework than we come from here in the United States. But nonetheless, we see that they're very human motivations that propel these people forward. And many of them are, and it's a complex mix of motivations: religious, psychological, social, cultural, that propel them forward. I can give you kind of one example in the book is there's a jihadi Romeo and Juliet. It's a young couple that fall madly in love, which is a very common occurrence, hopefully, for most of us. But for this young couple, after 5 years of dating passionately, it's time this young woman's father decides for her to get married. And in that society, in Saudi Arabia, getting married is a transaction. And it involves a man from a presumably better family or similar reference group who's going to come up with a bride price or dowry. And at that time, the going price was $20,000. This man had $30,000. The young lover, Abdullah, of this young woman, Miriam, didn't have the money to marry her. So she was married against her will. He goes off to fight in holy war, because in holy war, if he dies and goes to heaven, he can marry whomever he wants to. And lo and behold, that would involve his lost love of his life, Miriam. So you see by this story kind of the cultural, religious, economic, psychological, he was very depressed when he couldn't marry who he loved. All these factors kind of work into launching his decision to go off and fight in holy war. And then when he's in Iraq and fighting and he sees the corruption and the murder for almost sport and terrible power grabs of al-Qaeda, he becomes disillusioned, realizing this is not a holy war in the name of Islam, and that's what turns him away, from the struggle. So that's one story that illustrates kind of the complex of factors. And there are many stories in the book like that.
And the name of the book is Terrorists in Love, and you mentioned that story, but that is not the only one. Love really is a factor in this book, in one way, shape, or form.
In one way, shape, or form. Sometimes people go, a lot of people read the book and say, well, where are all the love stories? Well, the one I just told you is a love story in the traditional sense. But some of them are a lack of love, or some of them are a passionate love for God, and that's all that drives these people. So love plays a factor for a lot of people, not for everyone. Some, there are a couple of stories in the book where it's absent. And I don't say that this is the only thing that motivates people, but it's surprisingly a very important one for many young men, which is not surprising, because when you reach the age, when you're a teenager and you get 16, 17, and you get into your 20s, I mean, love usually is an important part of your lives. And when the only kind of love you can have is a transactional kind, an arranged marriage involving, I've never said this before because it never occurred to me until this exact moment, Joe, but, this is how the system of arranged marriages by money can affect the young men as well as the young. It dehumanizes everybody, and you never experience any kind of companionship with another person. There was another story in the book about a young man, Ahmad al-Shaye, who goes to Iraq, and he is blown up in a suicide attack, goes to Abu Ghraib, of all places, and is nursed back to health by a U.S. Army medic. It's the first woman he ever met outside his own family, and it transforms him and makes him fiercely pro-American in his heart. But think about that for a moment. He's 19, 20 years old. He had never talked to a woman in his whole life.
But those connections are so, I mean, it tells you a lot of how they got involved in this, and again, why I use the word impressionable, because in the same way that they were brought in is sort of how they're brought out. You tell the story of this Pakistani radical who is very violent intent, but you converse with him. You are the first American he has met. You are the first Jew that he has met, and you change him.
Yeah, I think he was on the road to being changed, but that's right. It was a dream I had that really changed him as much as me. But, he lived a very sheltered, cloistered existence. He didn't have any interaction with the broader world, so to speak. It's like it's similar to that story of the young man who goes to Abu Ghraib and meets, and Americans treat him with kindness and respect. I mean, the power of communication, is it going to change everybody in the radical movement? Certainly not. I mean, and there's another story in the book where I have this close communication with another guy, and he is follows through with his murderous ideology regardless of me. So, I mean, for many people, it doesn't change things. But what's surprising is for how many people it does change things. It's not, you know, we assume that if people are rigidly connected to an ideology, they're not going to change by interaction and exposure to facts. But what's surprising is how many do change. That's what's surprising, not those that don't. We expect them not to change. But when we see them change, and particularly in that case, when I saw someone change right before my very eyes, it's astonishing.
Ken Ballin is the author of the book Terrorists in Love, True Life Stories of Islamic Radicals, which is now out in paperback. Ken is also president and founder of Terror Free Tomorrow, which is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization that investigates the causes of extremism. Tell us about this organization and what your goals are.
Our goals are really to uncover facts, because facts have a way of changing our policy, our outlook on the world, but as this book illustrates, it also is the greatest power we have to changing the ideology on the other side. This is not about, what kind of military weapons we have or how many people we kill. In the long run, this is about education, if you will, for us and for other people. I mean, we just saw that terrible tragedy in Wisconsin. This is about educating people. I think ultimately that's what's going to bring us all closer together and have more understanding. As I said, not for everyone. There's a role for the military. Look, I was a federal prosecutor. I actually prosecuted terrorists. You know, I've been on the front lines of these conflicts. I've prosecuted organized crime figures, cocaine dealers. I've been in very dangerous situations. I'm certainly not advocating that there's not a role for law enforcement in the military. But I think sometimes we overplay that role to our own detriment, when really this is about knowledge and communication at the end of the day.
I want to bring the conversation full circle, because we started off by talking about the book, and you talked a little bit about terrorist fatigue and that being amongst readers. Do you feel that as a society and a culture, perhaps we have that feeling, which could ultimately prove to be damaging?
It is damaging. I mean, I think if we, by denying something and looking in the other direction, doesn't make the problem go away. And I think part of it is that we've had some great tactical success against Al-Qaeda since 9/11. I mean, we all know bin Laden was successfully assassinated, and I think that's probably the correct term, removed from the picture. I mean, we've had a lot of success with drone strikes. But the underlying conflict, the underlying causes for radicalism remain, and the extremist acts present an ever-present danger. And the way we have responded overwhelmingly in this country is to build up a kind of, counterterrorism infrastructure and superstructure. We've spent hundreds of billions of dollars, but I think, you know, we fortify the airports, we've done all of that, but those are not in the long run what's going to make us safe, frankly. Security is an endless thing. You never can be secure enough. You can keep spending and spending and spending to up the security, and it doesn't necessarily result in more security. So I think we have to rethink this, and we have to be effective. We have to know our adversary, and we have to expose their weak points and work with people who are presumably on the other side, but surprisingly really aren't. So I think we have, and I know I've spoken in some generalities, but really only if your listeners actually read the book and experience the stories firsthand will they understand what I mean.
Well, I certainly encourage them to do that. It is a fascinating book. It's Terrorists in Love, True Life Stories of Islamic Radicals. It is published by Free Press. You can find out more by going to terroristsinlove.com. Ken Ballin, I thank you very much for your time and your insight. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Okay, bye.
Again, the name of the book, Terrorists in Love, The Real Wives of Islamic Radicals, published by Free Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.